Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu Career to Go, dem Karriere-Podcast von StudyDrive. Mein Name ist Constanze Marie Teschner. Ich darf euch heute eine ganz besondere Episode präsentieren, denn wir haben dieses Interview mit gleich zwei tollen Gästen in unserer Community Area bei StudyDrive aufgenommen. Meine wunderbaren KollegInnen waren also live dabei, deshalb hört ihr eventuell mal ein Husten oder ein Lachen im Hintergrund. Aus diesem Grund haben wir das Interview auch auf Englisch geführt, was es bisher so in dem Podcast noch nicht gegeben hat, aber hoffentlich in Zukunft noch öfter so stattfinden wird. Und jetzt wünsche ich euch extrem viel Spaß bei dem Interview. Let's go!
Career to go.
Was macht man in einem bestimmten Job?
Career to go.
Career to go.
Wie wird man fit für die Arbeitswelt?
StudyDrive fragt nach.
Hello and welcome to Career to Go, the career podcast by StudyDrive. My name is Constanze Marie Teschner. Today is a very special day because I have two guests sitting right next to me. Both are successful entrepreneurs with extensive experience in their fields. Let me introduce you to Sebastian Detmers. He is the CEO of StepStone. StepStone, as we all know, is the leading company for all job-related topics. Not just finding a job, they offer also a huge knowledge to their customers so that they can build a successful career. I am eager to learn from your experience. Welcome, Sebastian.
Thank you for having me.
The second guest is Michael Brehm. He is a co-founder and investor of several companies. The most popular of his projects is StudiVZ. After his studies at WHU, he could have taken a promising career as an investment banker. Instead of doing this, he was involved in building the popular platform StudiVZ. And with it, he brought social media to Europe. Today, he gives his passion and expertise to Redstone, and I'm sure that he will share a lot of advice, career advice for us. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, before we dive right into the interview, I would like to know you a little bit better, get to know you a little bit better with our section, The Fantastic Four. Sebastian, good old memories. What did you want to become as you were a child?
First, I wanted to become a veterinarian, like almost every child. I think a policeman was also on the list. But pretty soon I realized that I wanted to end up somewhere in business, either launch a company or run a company. But there was a very loose dream that had something to do with the impression I got from television series and stuff like that. So not that I really understood what was happening in real company.
Michael, talent show, what is your greatest talent?
Good question. So I would probably say one is that I'm very stress resilient, and secondly that I'm, or what other people tell me is that I'm quite visionary. So I often like to think about things in the future.
Mm-hmm. Good talents, I have to admit. Bastian, power move. What is your most valuable quality?
I think, you know, everyone has many qualities, but if I think of the times that we're living in, is to see opportunities and even the most challenging times, and to consider like moments in which it seems like you almost have no solution as a learning experience to get yourself out of that situation and maybe even come up with something that is super innovative or just prove that you're resilient.
Mm-hmm. Michael, game show, what is your favorite game?
Probably Monopoly.
One of the basic ones, okay. Yes. Thank you. As I said before, I would like to hear about your career. So let's start right at the beginning. Sebastian, did you have a clear vision of your career back then when you started your studies, for example?
No, I had absolutely no idea of how to even approach a career. So I knew I wanted to go to university, but that was more a lack of alternatives than the desire to go to university and study something boring such as business administration, which I probably today won't really recommend to people. But I did that. I followed some friends. We had a good time. I took as many classes as possible, learned some new languages, and I think back then, the thing that I used most was the time that I had to just explore different fields. In the second term, we launched a small business. Interestingly, also in the field of obviously students, it was called Zadika. You could say it's something like the early Groupon. It never lived off. But anyhow, you had time and you could do a lot of things. And I think the more people I met, both from within the university, but especially outside the universities, young entrepreneurs, but also more experienced CEOs, the more I got an idea of what businesses really do and what I wanted to do personally.
Thank you. I think a lot of our listeners can relate to that. Michael, how did you confess to your parents that you take another path?
It was actually interesting because both my parents are quite conservative Bavarian medical doctors. And after university, I started at a bank, and they were very happy because that they could explain that to all their friends. And then 3 weeks before the bonus was paid, I quit and told my parents that I'm now going to do a startup. And at the time, like 2005, it was really like it was this internet startups were these things that just lost money and went bankrupt. And then they were a little bit shocked and they asked me, so what are you doing or what do you want to do? Yeah, I want to do like a social network. And they said, a social what? And then they said, yes, something where you can communicate with your friends. Okay, but what about SMS? And then they said, yeah, but do you have already a website? Yeah, there is a basic one from the two founders. Uh-huh. And do you have traffic? No. And do you have revenue? No. Okay, but at least do you know the two people you're going to do this with very good? And I said, yeah, well, I met them twice. As you can imagine, then there were a lot more questions, but ultimately they were very supportive and it was a quite fun discussion.
Okay, so very bold of you back then. Sebastian, did you have a job during your studies which had nothing to do with your career?
I think like all of us, multiple jobs. The job that I did most successful in the beginning was selling newspaper subscription on campus. So I was standing there having a booth once or twice per week, selling subscriptions of newspapers, magazines, and some journals. Because I was so successfully selling yearly subscription of the Handelsblatt, which is the Financial Times of Germany, I was then invited to the Handelsblatt as an incentive trip. And I did my first internship there back in 2000, which was super interesting. I think there were times when I had seven different bicycles. So that was one. Obviously, I was serving in bars and, you know, doing all that stuff to, you know, just have enough money in the banks for good weekends.
And at the end of the day, it pays out still, even though it was not directly leading to this, right?
I don't know. Talking about what Michael said earlier, resilience, you know, just accommodating yourself in every situation and be creative and find out what you're good at and what you're not so good at. And also maybe finding out that a career working in service is not what you desire for, but it's something else. But also seeing that you almost all the times have opportunities to earn some money in one way or the other. I think that's important for what you do later, and resilience is an important part of that. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that standing on campus, selling newspaper subscriptions when your friends pass by and other people from your classes is not always easy, you know, mm-hmm. explaining why you need to work while they're taking a break or are studying. But there was a time that taught me something about resilience, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Michael, what did you learn in your studies apart from the professional side, more for you as a person or for your life, maybe?
So I was quite engaged, and one of the kind of engagement I had, there was a conference called Campus for Finance. So I studied business administration. There was a huge finance conference, and the problem was when I was part of this new kind of organization committee, that because of the financial crisis, the event before us lost 50,000 euros. So they had to go to the university and said, dear university, we need 50,000 euros because unfortunately our sponsor had quit last minute. So the university wanted to kind of cancel that conference. And then I went in there and with at the time the head or the director, and I said to myself, I'm not going to leave before they allow us to have that. And I'm just not going to kind of get up and leave the office. And the meeting that was scheduled for a half an hour took actually 3.5 hours. And I told him multiple times, if you want me to leave here, there are just two options. Either you call the police, which is dragging me out, which I'm going to tell the newspaper the next day, or we find an agreement how we can continue with this conference. And I think he was pretty mad at me, but ultimately we found an agreement under which circumstances that was possible. One was that we were very kind of tight with the kind of spending. And then at the end, we figured there's still an option or to be there to be another loss, which I wanted to prevent. So we did two things. Once we canceled the decoration. So I went to the office opposite the headmaster's office and cut all the, green plants. There was a concrete wall, which was covered by, in German, it's Efeu. I don't know. So by green plants. Sorry?
Ivy.
Ivy, yeah, by ivy. So I cut all the ivy and basically I took sacks of ivy and dragged them to the conference hall. And the second one is that we canceled the service staff from the restaurant and said, we need the students to serve. So we actually asked 80 students to basically serve the guests the food, which luckily they agreed. They were a little bit kind of estranged at first, but then ultimately it was quite fun and that saved us a lot of money. And then we had a very profitable conference. And since then it has really flourished. So what did I learn? Determination and creative ways to save money.
It sounds like it. The very hands-on mentality. I feel that as well. Sebastian, what should be taught at university from your perspective today, which no one taught you back then?
I think it depends a bit on what you study, obviously. But in my case, business administration, I think there was a lot of theory and science behind it. And honestly, in areas where no science is needed. When you look at today's businesses and, let's say, the startup environment, there's so much innovation and new ideas, new theories that are developed every day that I think what science does or universities do is very often running behind and explain ex post what just has happened in business. So I think creating more links between businesses, between companies, and what's happening at university, on campus, and the lectures is key. So I'm a big fan of Harvard, let's say, of those case studies where you take real-life examples, tough decisions that business leaders needed to make, in which you, A, learn something about the reality of business, where not everything is perfect, where not everything just fits in PowerPoint slides. But also, obviously, you need to understand the backgrounds, the, let's say, accounting implications, tax implications, whatever the concrete challenge is. And that's something that I learned with one of the professors I had at my university, Professor Meffert, who was called the marketing pope in Germany, where I also have written my PhD thesis. He was, interestingly, the first professor who brought CEOs to universities. And he was offended because of that by other professors. That was back in the 1960s and 70s, because back then it was completely unpopular to have people from the business world in the academic world. But he did that. And by that, he created like almost daily exchange between the business realities and what's taught at university. And I think that's the moment where I realized what I wanted to do. But way too often I found myself just, you know, learning PowerPoint slides, learning textbooks to prepare for exams instead of preparing myself for the real life out there.
So more action, not that much theory.
Actually, I would say business realities combined with some foundational knowledge about how economies work, how businesses work. There's some part in, you know, auditing, accounting, legislation, taxation, which you just need to know if you run a business. But that's easy to learn. I think you need to know how to work with that. But understanding the complexity of business challenges, the dynamics, which also often sit on the intersection between, let's say, complex technical challenges or business challenges, but also very social challenges. You know, running a company with, be it 10, 100, 10,000 people, it's not like you just decide something that you know, have a case study where you say, do I turn left or right? The question always is, you know, with your organization, with the capabilities that you have, with the markets you're in, with the legacy, with the customer relationships, what is the right answer, which is often different than the answer you would find on a green field when, let's say, you're starting a new business. So I think the world is way more complex. It doesn't fit into PowerPoint slides. It doesn't fit into easy theories. And exposing yourself to those complexities and find solutions for that, which are never perfect, but which are probably better than what other people come up with, either in ideation or in execution. That's key. And that's how businesses succeed. This is how they outperform their peers. And I find that this is not taught enough and practiced enough at universities, which leaves you after graduating with, you need to learn all of that in real life business.
Hmm. Maybe your professor is one reason that one of the Kardashians is teaching from time to time at the university, very popular case. Michael, how do you deal with challenges and obstacles that come your way in your career?
Sleep and sports. It's true. It actually helps a lot. It's not always possible, but I read a good, just somebody, or I don't know where I read this, but he said sleep is the hidden superpower. And I think there's a lot of truth in that, because if you're tired, it's just so difficult to think, to be effective. It doesn't mean that you should stay in bed the whole day, but to get anywhere, at least like anywhere between 7 or 8 hours, it really makes a complete difference. Mm. And then if you do half an hour in sports, that at least per day, that also, so it's essentially, let's say you sleep for 7 hours and you dedicate half an hour of sports and you have 15 minutes before and 15 minutes after. It's like 8 hours that if you kind of make that happen, it's a completely different day. And then with that kind of feeling, mindset, ability, you go as a completely different human to challenges. Mm-hmm. So I'm far away from managing to do this every day or even every week, but it's like the big goal for like the rest of the year and for next year is these two things. I really prioritize that. If like many years ago, I just wrote like, what's your aims and your targets for the year? And I came up with 20 points. And this year I just set actually 1 point, it's sleep. Because if you sleep well, more likely to just organize your day properly, to do sports, and then everything else trickles.
Super interesting that you say that. I mean, when we grew up, I think lots of CEOs were quoted in magazines, you know, telling how little sleep they needed, just 2 hours, 3 hours. And there was a sign of stamina, or at least was perceived like that. And now it's almost taking the opposite turn. But I agree, it's very important.
I think you shouldn't like mistaken it for just being lazy and kind of spending in bed the whole day. But if it's like 7 hours, it means like basically you go to bed at 11 o'clock at night and you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's 7 hours of sleep.
It's self-discipline.
So it's essentially discipline. And I think, I mean, there are some rare cases which need very little sleep, but it's, I think, the absolute exception. And it's also sometimes, I mean, where just you have to finish something, where you have to work very late at night, and maybe even in rare cases, even do all-nighters, how it's called. But that should be the absolute exception.
I couldn't agree more. I'm a former fitness coach and I was preaching this for years. And now I can refer also to you as a professional in the business world, and maybe my colleagues will believe me then. Sebastian, can you share a defeat or a setback you experienced in your career, and how did you deal with it?
I think, you know, talking about this one defeat or that one setback as a life-changing moment, certainly there were, you know, bigger ones, but I think like every day there are setbacks. Every day you try to hire someone and that person rejects you, say something which is received poorly, you made a wrong decision. That is happening every day. And I think, you know, minimizing that by learning as much as possible from making these mistakes, but also seeing that as a learning journey, that's the important thing. I was fortunate enough to never have such a poor decision that business really significantly suffered from that, or, you know, I lost my job or it destroyed lots of money. I mean, I had made so many poor decisions. I met poor business decisions. I've met poor hiring decisions, like everything. But is it good or bad? Do I see it as a defeat? No, I see it as part of the learning journey. I rather think that I'm lucky that I was given the opportunity to so early in my life run a business and to have had the opportunity to make so many mistakes and to learn from that. And now I look back at many, many years, you know, making mostly mistakes and some good decisions. But that's an important experience you make, not just in terms of, again, coming about the social aspect and the business aspect, not just in terms of, you know, making better business decisions, but also to, you know, get more resilience, to understand how it feels to be criticized, either just privately or also publicly, for what you've said, for the decisions that you've made. But to understand that this is just a snapshot. It feels bad that moment, but if you make better decision tomorrow, if you learn something from that, then you become a better leader, or you become a better business person. And therefore, you know, I'm grateful every time I get taught a lesson, somebody else is making a better decision or so. That's all part of the game. And I think, you know, that's why we love sports. We don't want to see perfect athletes. We want to see persons, you know, giving their best, making mistakes. And that's what competition is built on.
Michael, what advantages do you see for young starters, young professionals nowadays?
I think, first of all, every time has its advantages and disadvantages, and it's always sometimes looking back, it's easier, or looking forward, it's easier. But I think right now is just a truly amazing time. First of all, you have an incredible speed of technical advancement, of new opportunities. And one of the things that I would say, both actually, if you work in a company or want to start something, is so great that the cost of trying things is so incredibly low in every dimension. I mean, for example, when I was building with the two founders the first company, there was no cloud computing. So we actually had to physically screw in kind of servers into the rack. We had an own team who was screwing in servers. And you had lead times of months to buy these servers. So if you grew, it was like really difficult. And now you, it's basically just a question sometimes of euros or tens of euros to try something out. And now obviously with ChatGPT and creating these GPTs yourself, it's just crazy. So I think that's, I'm sometimes a little bit envious about the students that are now young, because it's, you can just try tons of things very easily.
And what challenges do in particular young talents facing today?
I think the challenges that you're facing today are in many aspects similar to challenges that people were facing in the past. Like the moment you graduate, you go into a business or start your own company, you're exposed to all sorts of challenges. You just realize how imperfect the world is. I think the dynamics with which the world is changing right now probably makes this time we're living in very special. Like there's so many things that are changing every day, so many businesses which are either dying or getting launched. If we just look at AI, and Michael just said it, like there's technological advancements every day. And even for experts, it's so hard to keep up with that. So you can't keep up with that. And you need to ask yourself, where do I want to be good at? And also timing is essential. Like you can't do everything at once, but what do you want to do now and what can wait? And I think, you know, that is challenging and interesting at the same time, because, you know, what would be the opposite? Living in less dynamic times and with less learning opportunities. I think it's a great time to launch a business, to disrupt also in the digital space some businesses which have been invented like 10, 20 years ago, and to come up with innovative ideas and applying AI to solve problems differently and create better user experiences. So I find it's interesting. But one thing is for sure, you need resilience, and you need to survive in a world physically and mentally in which so many things are questions, where so many things are changing at the same time. And also, I mean, we can call it effect. The world around us is going pretty crazy right now. And to cope with that next to, you know, your personal challenges and your personal career is not easy. And hopefully that will go away. But for the time being, it's the world we're living in.
Mm-hmm. And apart from resilience, which we have heard a lot now, which soft skills should career starters, young talents develop to be successful today?
I would probably say three things. One is an old one, and one is you should learn how to learn, which is super important. Second one, I would say, is to ask questions, which is for me probably professionally one of the most important skills, because the knowledge is out there. The probability that there is something which has never been thought of is super low. So the question is, how do you find that knowledge and how do you get the answer? And that's like asking the right questions. What's interesting, it makes actually the old Greek philosophers suddenly super relevant. I know actually a lot of tech entrepreneurs now that really study philosophy and read the old Greeks, because they say it's something of probably some of the most relevant way of thinking for today's world. And the third one I would say is presenting and selling. And it might surprise you because you always think of this, oh, there is this dodgy salesperson. But no matter what you are, even if you are a hardcore engineer, you have to kind of sell to your fellow engineers, to your boss, to investors. If you're a professor, you have to actually fundraise for your university chair. So I think the skill of selling something or just convincing people is vastly underrated, especially in the non-Anglo-American world. And it would be something I wish was taught a lot more in schools and universities, because for me, that's one of the big differences, for example, to the US, is that people can just sell better. And no matter if it's the academic or the craftsman or the manager, they just simply sell better. And I think that's one of the huge differences.
I'd like to finish the episode with practical hacks or advices. Did you receive an advice in your career which was just perfect and leads you through your career?
Yeah, and it refers a bit to when Michael talked about sleep and sports. That is the ability to really structure your time and your day and to not live through the day and, do all the things that people require from you, but be very proactive in managing your calendar and what you want to spend time on. And not just in a business sense, but, your entire day, including sleep. And when I was thinking about that, together with my PA, I was working through my calendar and we analyzed how much time I spent on which tasks, like meeting clients, doing Joe fixes, sitting in steer course, talking to our shareholders and all that kind of stuff. And we analyzed that. And then next to it, I said how it should be. And based on that, we designed my calendar very proactively. And it had some, really bold consequences. I walked to our shareholders and said, sorry, I cannot meet with you once per week. I can only do that twice per week because I spend so much percent of my working time with you. And I want to allocate that time to other things like this and that. So that's your business time, but also your private time. And I think if you want to say yes to some things which really matter to you and are important, be it business things, be it sports, be it sleep, be it friends, your family, then you also need to say no to lots of other things. In the business world, where do you want to be good at? But also actively decide where you not want to be good at. And in your private lives, you can't do everything. Like there's so many things I want to do, but I don't do most of them actually. And there are some few things which I decide I want to spend lots of my time on. One obviously is family. One is sports, but not all sports. And it sounds boring and maybe it sounds a bit intellectual to structure your life like that and leave little time for spontaneous things. But I believe if you want to be good at something, if you want to succeed in this world we're living in, then you need to focus and decide again where you want to be good at, but also decide where not.
And what advice would you like to give to our community for a sustainably successful career?
Yeah, well, probably define for yourself what success means. I think that's very different to different people. And then also look, obviously, for where you, it's maybe a little bit overrated, where you have ideally a certain amount of passion, but then also can earn a living. I'm not a big fan of saying, oh, just go for your passion, because if you don't earn any money at all, after a while, it also sucks quite a bit. And also many people who now say, oh, just go for your passion, they actually, if you want to grind it quite a lot. And even if you go for something where you think you have a lot of passion, there is a lot of sacrifice and there is a lot of kind of annoying things you have to do. So I think that's also quite romanticized. So probably the other thing is also just work hard. I know literally nobody and really nobody who was successful in their career, whatever that means, who didn't work an insane amount of time. And even if, for example, a famous example, maybe if you look at some of the influencers and it looks so easy, if you look behind the scenes, a lot of them work 12, 14, even 16 hours per day. And it's pretty insane what they do. And no matter if that's for sports, musicians, artists, academics, it really, if you want to succeed, it's a lot of work, full stop.
Thank you. Thank you both for this inspiring conversation. It was an honor to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Dear listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. When so, please share this episode. Please subscribe to the channel. Thanks for listening and Bye.